Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day International post-match podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, former England striker Andy Cole and Alex Crook. Coming up, England mount a comeback to beat the best team in the world. But were they lucky against Belgium? We're all right, Jack. Grealish left on the bench and social media goes into meltdown. But was Southgate right to leave him out? Also, does Project Big Picture mean a little future for everyone outside the top six? And will England further their Nations League cause against the Danes? All on the podcast that, like Grealish, is incapable of pulling its socks up. The Game Day post-match pod from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Welcome to the Game Day International post-match pod with me, Sam Matterface, and Andy Cole, the former England striker, and TalkSport transfer guru Alex Crook. Very good evening to you both. I've just literally walked across the road from Wembley. It was only like 20, 30 minutes ago I was in my seat watching England beat the world's best nation. For those of you who don't know what happened, England went behind very early in the game. It actually started quite brightly, dominated possession. Then with their first real attack, Belgium had a disallowed goal. They then scored a penalty after a ridiculous Eric Dier challenge, only for England to get a penalty for what was the softest penalty I've seen. And one of the things that I know, Crook, you wanted to mention was about penalties, because not only there seems to be so many of them and how soft they are, but also the fact that no one ever misses them anymore because there's no crowd. And then England won it in the last 10-15 minutes with a goal from Mason Mount, which took a heavy deflection. Second half performance much better than the first from England, where at times they looked a little bit timid again, which they have done when they've played that back three, and it hasn't really connected up through midfield right the way through to the attack. Obviously, gentlemen, we're going to go for a quick dissection, but Crook, do you just want to make your point on penalties right at the very top?
Yeah, I was watching with a colleague from TalkSport as Rashford stepped up, and I said, well, he'll score this because nobody misses penalties anymore. And he said, oh, don't jinx him. But they don't. I know Andy wasn't particularly keen on taking penalties. Was there only one in your Premier League career?
Yeah, it's too far out for him, right. He said.
But surely without that venomous crowd behind the goal, it's effectively a training ground scenario. You put the ball down from 12 yards, and 9 times out of 10, you're going to find the back of the net. We're seeing very few missed penalties now, and I think that's a big byproduct of playing behind closed doors.
And did you agree with that? And did you really not take it because it was too far out for you?
No, I keep saying I get asked this all the time, and I take a lot of flack about not taking penalties.
Really?
I said, you know, yeah, I have done. Yeah, a lot of the boys give me flack.
Is that because if you did take penalties, you'd be well over the hills and far away from Shearer's record?
Well, that's what everyone seems to think. But I turned around and I said, look, I didn't take him because I genuinely believe that if I'm going to play as a centre forward, I have to get myself in the right position to score goals. And if I can't do it, this is my thoughts. I'm not trying to have a go at anybody else. This is just the way I thought. If I couldn't do it in open play, I wasn't as good as I believed I was.
Yeah, so the record should only be counted if you take the penalties away.
I'm not saying that at all either.
But I'm saying for me personally. We're saying it.
So we're effectively doing this podcast with the record Premier League goal scorer. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. Right, let's get to the England highlights.
Head-to-head with top-ranked Belgium. Defeat in the Nations League final will be all but out of the Three Lions' grasp. But victory and that feel-good factor will start to snowball again in the first significant test of a tournament season. Bursting run from Romelu Lukaku goes down. What's the referee's decision there? Play on. It was Dier that came across. And now He's given the penalty. England haven't conceded a goal for 561 minutes, but it's Lukaku against Pickford, and they have now. The referee is seeing some pulling and shoving going on inside the box. I think it's Alderweireld that he's booked. And it's a penalty for England and a chance to get back on level terms. Runs up, stops his run, right-footed, brilliant penalty. It's Mignolet dived to his left-hand side. Rashford just waited for that initial movement from the keeper. Fired it into the open half of the goal. Trippier nodding it down, it's a good header as well. Found Mason Mount, out of Varel defending. Mount with a looping, lobbing effort. That's taken a deflection and has spooned over Mignolet and in. And England have turned it around and lead 2-1. Thielemans for De Bruyne. Good run forward from Carrasco. And it's wide. That was close. Halfway stage of the Nations League campaign, England sit top of the group. They've beaten the side ranked number one in the world.
Well, in the end, England ended up beating Belgium by 2-1. And it's got to be seen as a triumph, hasn't it? Because Gareth Southgate has come under a bit of criticism, especially in big games against big nations and not changing the game, etc., etc. England much better second half than they were first. And ultimately, Andy Cole, you know what it's like to put on that England shirt. But to beat the world's best nation right now, that's got to be seen as an achievement, right?
Yeah, it's got to be, especially after their second half performance. I thought England played really well the second half. First half, for 15 minutes, England played well. And then after that, Belgium dominated and could have been out of sight. But England stuck with them. And like I said, second half played really well and deserved the win.
Who stood out for you in terms of performance-wise?
I think second half, Mount. I thought Rashford looked like the old Rashford. You know, I think the midfield areas, they got it together, push further on. And close Belgium down. So I think Mount and Rashford did really well for me. Back four won't really test his second half. And, you know, Walker's very good at using his pace, and he did that in the second half a few times as well.
Yeah, a lot of people sort of raised their eyebrows, didn't they, when Kyle Walker was selected crook. But ultimately did a good job, didn't they?
Again, yeah.
I wasn't impressed with the team when it came out. I articulated that on Darren Bent's boot room. I articulated that to you privately, Sam.
What did I tell you about Kyle Walker? What did I say was going to happen?
And you were right. Kyle Walker surprised me. I think it was a leap of faith in some ways from Gareth Southgate after what happened to him against Iceland, but he justified his selection. Eric Dyer, maybe less so. I mean, you won't see too many worse tackles than that over the course of the season. It was the most blatant penalty you'll ever see. But I agree with Andy. Mason Mount stepped it up in the second half. He pressed high. He obviously scored a deflected goal. And Marcus Rashford has been struggling for form for club and country since that back injury. But that was more like the Marcus Rashford that we know and love. And what a fantastic week for him. Gets the MBE, scores a penalty and plays a big part in England beating the best team in the world.
I got a few of the five-word match reports that I put out on Twitter straight after the end of the game. This is from BWD, who says, getting better, wait for next year. Danny P said, Declan Rice played very well. And actually, Andy, that's worth pointing out as well, isn't it? Because I thought that Declan Rice in that sort of midfield holding position, especially as the game went on, grew into the match.
Yeah, I thought it did. I thought first half, he really struggled. You know, when you've got the quality of De Bruyne in there, he'll run rings around most players. And I thought he struggled first half. You know, the back four pushed out, the midfield pushed out, and they closed Belgium down. So that was a lot better. And Declan Rice come into it in the second half.
Some people aren't happy, though, are they? I mean, a lot of people were sort of causing problems with the, or had problems with the team selection in the first place. Where was Grealish? Where was Connor Cody? The zero creativity in the team. In fact, Dean Began says that as his five-word match report. Zero creativity, paper over cracks. Connor Cody should have started, says Graham Palmer. But ultimately, Cody and Grealish didn't play because they've only just come into the team, and this is a three-game match week. They'll probably play against Denmark. He wasn't going to just thrust them straight into the side, was he, Andy?
I think he had the opportunity to do it if he wanted to. Like I said yesterday on the show, you know, for me personally, Connor Cody could play. I think he's in very good form for Wolves. He played the last game for England, played very well against Wales. So I wouldn't be surprised if he played today, just like Grealish. I mean, I know he picked Mount in front of Grealish today, but I would not be surprised if Grealish played, because the way he played against Wales the other night, me sitting there, I'd say to myself, yeah, go on then. I'd play him against Belgium, because when we talk about that creativity, and I said on the show yesterday, he has that little bit of magic whereby he can open up that door when it's needed.
the argument will be from Gareth Southgate that he hasn't played as many high-calibre games in terms of European opposition as Mason Mount, and that's why he included him, Crook. And I suppose when he looks back at the game, it's vindicated, isn't it, that he chose to put Mount in?
Yeah, we also know that Gareth Southgate likes the team ethos as opposed to one particular star. And I do wonder if the comparisons to Paul Gascoigne that have been levelled at Jack Grealish in some quarters this week almost worked against him. And maybe that was Gareth Southgate's way of keeping him grounded and bringing him back down to earth.
You say that, but if that was the case, why did he hand him the number 19 shirt today? I couldn't get my head around that. I thought, for a guy who's trying to dampen down the expectations and comparisons between Jack Grealish and Gazza, why has he allowed him to wear the 19, which is the iconic number that Gazza wore in the 1990 World Cup?
Surely that was just an oversight, wasn't it?
It must have been, because the first thing that happened as soon as I saw the team sheet come out, I went, oh, he's got Gazza's number.
Well, that's why you were at the top of your game, Sam, because I didn't necessarily make that connection. And I don't think Andy did either.
No, I didn't even know what number is. I just realised he wasn't playing, so that was me.
Yeah, a Thursday flourish and a Sunday rest for Jack Grealish. We may well see him against Denmark. Okay, so let's talk about Belgium then, because everybody thinks they're the best nation in the world. They've got this great crop of players. I was looking at the ages of some of those players, though, and they're coming towards the latter stages, the twilight of their career. I mean, a lot of them have got over 100 caps. A lot of them have got more than that. And Roberto Martinez has been in charge for quite some while. I think he'll be disappointed that his team played the way they did, especially in the second half, where they created very little. I think England deserve credit for stopping them create, but I don't know, if I was a Belgian fan, I think I'd be more disappointed than if I'm an England fan.
I do wonder if they're going to be the latest nation to underachieve, because we had the great Portuguese side, the likes of Luis Figo and Rui Costa, that never quite translated their obvious talents to a major tournament. Obviously, England with the likes of Beckham and Lampard and Gerrard and Scholes. Maybe this is the latest golden generation that won't quite go on to achieve what we think, because you're right, it's an ageing squad now. Obviously, they were missing several key players tonight, but would you put your money on them to win the European Championships with any real conviction? I'm not sure I would. Andy obviously is shaking his head.
He often does at you.
Belgium are a very good team. I think we know that and appreciate that. And when we talk about a golden generation, you can't be cast as a golden generation if you've not won anything. You know, the team you touched on there, Portugal, England, now Belgium, where they're at now. Do they have a chance to win the Euros in the summer? Oh, of course they do. You know, I think they've shown their quality throughout how many years now. You know, but if you look at some of the other teams vying for that championship come the summer, you know, France looking very strong, but you just never know what can happen come the summer with these kind of teams, you know, because they've got so much quality.
More five-word match reports. England win an overhyped friendly. JD says, why does Southgate hate Grealish? I don't think he does. I just think, again, it's a three-game match week. It's fascinating to hear what people think about it. How do you win people over in circumstances like this when you're playing games, three games in a week? I mean, I spoke to Gareth Southgate last week and he said, well, if you had seen what I had to deal with in terms of the players' fitness levels and abilities when they came back after their very short summer break, some of them came almost straight off the beach and onto the playing field against Iceland. I think Declan Rice had one training session before that game against Iceland. He said, I knew it was going to be a nightmare. I knew we were going to be judged that we weren't at full speed. He goes, but we haven't seen these players for 10 months. Do you factor in all the COVID conundrums into today's performance as well, Andy?
I would factor in. Of course I would, but not everyone's not going to factor in. Professional footballers are not robots. And yeah, of course they need the break in the summer. It could only be in 2 weeks. So there's no way they're going to hit the ground running. You know, now it's going to take a little bit of time. And I have mentioned in previous interviews that I've done, don't be surprised if quite a few of the players suffer a little bit of burnout come Christmas. You know, because it's been a continuous season whereby they're not being able to get too much rest. But on the flip side of that, the chap who mentioned he hates Grealish, no, the only way you're going to get experience against these kind of teams is if you give these guys the opportunity to play in games like tonight. You know, so it would have been a great opportunity for Gareth to give him an opportunity, you know, and see how he got on. If he's thinking that Mason Mount is playing Champions League football or other European football.
2 points when it comes to Jack Grealish. We had a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan ring the boot room on Sunday afternoon and suggest that maybe Gareth Southgate has a problem with Aston Villa. I'm not convinced by that. I do think he has a problem with Jack Grealish, perhaps in terms of his personality and his maverick playing style. And we talked about this in midweek with Darren Lewis. I think he would probably be a very difficult player to coach. And maybe at the moment, Gareth Southgate still doesn't trust him on the bigger stage to be disciplined that he needs him to be. And that was a disciplined performance against Belgium. But the other point, Andy, if you were Jack Grealish, and I know it was a frustration for you that perhaps you didn't get the number of England caps that you deserved. If you played as well as he did in midweek, would you have expected to be in the starting lineup this afternoon?
I mean, you mentioned me. Yeah, I was disappointed at times because ultimately, if you're playing well for your respective club, yeah, when you go away with England, you want to feel that you've got the opportunity to play against whatever nation it is. Now, he played against Wales. He played extremely well, man of the match. You've got to go in there with a mindset saying, I've got half a chance, by the way. I mean, I thought I played well. I got half a chance playing against Belgium, a lot better team than Wales, not being disrespectful. So when you do get left out and you're left out and you play Mason Mount and then all the noise what's being made about possibly Gareth not getting on with him or he's difficult to coach. We're all difficult to coach. I mean, because everyone's got an ego and some want to do things a different way. But when you have that maverick in your team, ultimately, you've got to make a space for that maverick because he could be your game winner. And I've played with Maverick. I played with Eric Cantona. You know, that's possibly one of the biggest mavericks you're ever going to have in the English game. The manager used to manage him totally different to the way he used to manage us. But come Saturday, Wednesday, whenever it is, he will produce that magic. You turn and say, I can see why.
I don't think he's fallen out with Jack Grealish. I don't think he's got a problem with Jack Grealish. I think actually the opposite has happened in the last few weeks. I think ultimately before the last international break, and he called him into the squad because of the injuries that they had and the positive COVID test that they had, he wasn't really on his radar. It was sort of like on the fringes of his thoughts. But Jack's won him over. I think the conversations between the two, especially over the last few weeks, have certainly increased Southgate's thinking in terms of, can I include this guy or not? And that's why he started him in the game against Wales. I think the issue is, as Crook said earlier, actually he might not be ready yet to trust him at the highest level when they're playing a big team like Belgium and they need a really disciplined performance. Jack Grealish can do that. If you saw him on the game against Wales, at one point he was defending in the right fullback area.
Yeah, I'm not sitting here saying Gareth dislikes him or whatever, you know, but I look at it this way. The original squad, which he wasn't selected for, I was scratching my head saying, hold up, why was he not selected for the original squad? Because he should have been. His form for Aston Villa, he was down the bottom, struggled last season, but his form alone, most people kept him in the division, you know, and he must be thinking to himself, well, what do I have to do? He gets in, like you said, via COVID and injuries and that. And since he's got in, he has been really, really good, especially the performance he put on him against Wales.
I just wanted to go back to the point that Andy made about Alex Ferguson's handling of Eric Cantona. Is that the art of a truly world-class manager, knowing how to manage specific individuals and presumably not alienating the rest of the squad? Because if he was managing Eric Cantona differently, there was a danger that the rest of you players might have had your noses put out of joint.
You see, the way I look at things like that, if I have a maverick in my team that I'm playing with, yeah, and the manager wants to treat him totally different to how he treats everybody else, I'm not fussed, because I know that individual come whenever day we need him, yeah, he will turn up. And sometimes in top teams, national teams or club teams, you're going to have those individuals, and managers have to manage everyone in totally different ways.
Are we getting a little bit carried away, though, comparing Grealish to first Gazza and now Eric Cantona? I mean, does he have that sort of level of impact on an England national game? Let's be honest.
No, I'm not saying he does. But what I am saying is that I've watched him numerous times, like we all have. He's got something. He has definitely got something which is different.
He's a joy to watch, isn't he?
Yeah. You know, so I'm not saying he's as good, nowhere near as good as Gazza. I'm not saying he's in Eric Cantona's class. Yeah, but what I am saying, if you look at him week in, week out for what he does for Aston Villa and what he did the other day for England against Wales, he definitely has something different than every other English midfield player in that position.
I think actually the biggest absentee tonight really was Connor Cody. That sort of surprised me more than anything else, because I thought his leadership qualities at the back against Wales were brilliant. I don't think that position is as demanding in terms of fitness, so he could have played twice in 3-4 days, whatever it is. And also, I don't think Eric Dyer is particularly suited to playing in that middle of the three, and I think we saw that for the challenge on Lukaku, which I'm still trying to work out what he was trying to do with that. I mean, what was he tackling? Did he see a blade of grass that he thought I'd try and go for? I couldn't work that out, because he just seemed to dive in to an area where the ball wasn't even there.
He still tried to protest his innocence as well, didn't he, after the ball went behind, that it wasn't a foul. I agree, and I think Eric Dyer actually is probably still getting used to being a central defender again, because of course he was used as a defensive midfielder for the past couple of seasons. What do we make of Harry Maguire's performance tonight? Because he hasn't been in great form for Manchester United so far this season. Yeah. Will he take confidence from how he performed?
I believe so. He got on with his job. He did what he had to do. Wasn't really tested second half. First half, I thought the back three was tested, you know. And like I said, Belgium could have run away with it 2-0 down. The disallowed goal, I'm still scratching my head regarding why that was disallowed.
All right, okay. So I've seen the replay as to why that was disallowed now. And basically, first of all, I thought that the original passage of play where the ball goes down the right-hand side, the linesman flagged for offside there, but he flagged about 4 days after the event had finished. In fact, they were celebrating.
That's right.
They changed the score bug to 1-0, and then he raised his flag. I was like, what the hell is going on? He was a bit slow, that linesman. But once we've seen the replay from the 18-yard line, you actually see that what the reason it's been disallowed is because Castagna is in an offside position when the ball is shot by Carrasco, and he's standing in the eye line of Jordan Pickford, therefore interfering with play. Okay. So that's why it was ruled out. But it did take us a little while to unpick that.
Andy Cole would have claimed that.
you got to try and claim anything. You know, it's international football.
You're talking to Alex Crook. He claims everything.
If
me or you make a good point today, he'll be on breakfast tomorrow morning saying, I think blah, 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 and then claiming it as his own. Don't you
this
worry
is
about
true.
That. That's his modus operandi.
Was it a triumph for Gareth Southgate in some ways tonight as well? Because I wasn't the only one to deride the team selection, but also, is this the first time in his England career that they've been up against the ropes at half time and he's managed to do something in those 15 minutes that have turned the game in England's favour against truly world class opponents?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, a lot of criticism is levelled against him for when they come up against the very best, not scoring goals, not even scoring goals from open play. They never score a goal against a good team from open play. They rely on penalties so often. If you go back through the history, I was doing it earlier actually, you know, scrubbing it off. If you take the Spain and Croatia crazy games in the last Nations League out of it, you've got to go back to the before the start of the last World Cup, before they scored a goal from open play against a top nation in a top game. It's lots of 0-0s and 1-0s and whatever. But tonight, they did create something, and they created something when they moved the ball quicker. And that's the key thing, isn't it? Move the ball quicker and it unsettles teams.
It certainly does. But I've got a lot of time for Gav. I think anyone who takes the England job, first and foremost, needs a head testing. You know, because everyone has his perception that you get the England job and you're going to take over and England are going to win the World Cup, they're going to win the Euros, they're going to dominate for how many years. That's not going to happen. Yeah, we do have some really good players, but we have to marry it together and realise that other nations and other countries have very good players as well. But I think since he's taken the job, he's gone in, he's tried to bring in other players, he's tried to change the system, he's bringing youth, and he's trying to marry it together. Yeah, at times England not being very creative, but he perseveres in what he's trying to do, which is a great, great positive in my eyes.
Crook, do you think that actually one of the reasons why there was such a backlash before the game, and why even after the game there's still a little bit of the old, oh, it wasn't that great, they were lucky, is because actually he's been the manager now for 4 years and people are just getting a little bit bored, really? I mean, they're seeing quite a few of the same. I mean, I think people's suggestion is they've seen a lot of the same old faces. I mean, he has given 40 different players their debut, so we can't be accused of not including a wider pool of players.
Yeah, but I also think maybe that the football is less dynamic now than when he first got the job, because I think he's trying to plan for the future and he's trying to plot his way towards winning a major tournament. I think
and he's realised that actually the defenders aren't at a top level, so he's got to deploy three of them.
Yeah, so he has to offer protection, not just in a back three, but also sitting two in front of them. The acid test is still to come. You know that I think he probably got too much praise for what happened at the World Cup, because ultimately they didn't really play anybody. When they did, he was found wanting against Croatia. This is his tournament coming up, the European Championships next summer on home soil with a very talented group of young players. It's sink or swim time. That they have to, for me, at least get to the semi-final. I think they have to be one of the favourites to try and win the trophy. Anything less than that, and I think he could be in trouble.
I love it.
That's a very big statement there.
He's not like a big statement.
He's not afraid of those, is he? Yeah.
God, dear. We watched France the other night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking at France and I'm saying to myself, wow.
Well, you and I...
Wow. They're your tip.
Andy and I watched the Ukraine game, didn't we? And some of the goals that they scored in that... I mean, okay, they were playing Ukraine, but some of the goals they scored were unbelievable.
So when we're talking about going to win the Euros come the summer, you're disregarding a lot of other teams with great strengths, i.e. France, Germany. Germany are always going to be there or thereabouts. You know,
Germany are rebuilding, though, aren't they, in lots of ways?
You know what? We can say that about Germany all we like, yeah? Come to a major tournament, where does Germany usually get to?
Semi-finals.
I remember when they were rebuilding after we smashed them to 5-1 in Munich in 2001. The next year they got to the World Cup final.
but it's that home advantage as well, isn't it? I mean, we saw what a difference that made at Euro 96. You've got to take that into account massively.
Yeah, but it's probably going to be in Germany, let's be honest about it. I doubt it's going to be all over the globe again, like everyone's planning for.
This is your conspiracy theory. That is, you know, we'll visit that at a later date.
Yeah.
I don't think he will make it much of an advantage. I really don't. Yeah, naturally, of course, if a lot of games are based in England, the country's definitely going to get behind England 100%. But with that comes a hell of a lot of pressure as well, as per normal.
Okay, we've been recording this podcast for probably about 20, 25 minutes now. Is there anyone who's going to be actually positive about the fact that we've beaten the world's best nation?
Well, all I would say, I don't think it did us any harm that a lot of people turned their nose up at the team sheet. A lot of people were saying, oh, we got no chances, picked the wrong players. Because I think what they showed tonight, and Mason Mount maybe is a prime example, because he knew that most people wanted Jack Grealish in the team ahead of him. They stuck two fingers up to the country tonight and said, actually, we're going to go out and prove you wrong. We're going to go and beat this Belgian side. And they did that. So maybe we're actually approaching this current England crop from the correct perspective, because we're not calling them the golden generation. Most people other than me aren't expecting them to win major trophies, and maybe they might just surprise a few.
For me personally, ultimately all I look at England is every year in and year out, they have to progress. At some stage you'd like to believe that England were going to win a major tournament, of course, because they have more than enough talent, but it's marrying all that talent together at the right time so they can go and win a major tournament. I think it'd be too much for England to win it this summer. You know, have to move on from there. But to win major tournaments are not easy, i.e. in Belgium's case, a lot of players have come to the end of their international careers and they might be saying, right, this is our time.
I don't think we did touch, or if we did touch it, probably didn't do it justice. Is Roberto Martinez a very lucky manager that he's got all these great resources to use, or yes, is he just a very good manager who's got the best out of them?
Look, I've got nothing against him. I've got nothing against anyone, to be fair. But I think to take over that crop of players he's had, a good manager, which he was a good club manager, to go in there and to tick them over, to get them in shape for a major tournament, I think 9 out of 10 people could do that, because he's got so much quality with these guys. Previously, Wilmot did it before he lost his job. You know, he didn't win a major tournament. That's why he lost his job. You know, Martinez is in the same position. He's got to go on to win a tournament to say, right, I've taken this generation and they've gone on to win something.
Yeah, those chances are running out, aren't they? Okay, we're going to talk about England's next game, which is against Denmark, in just a minute. We'll just do a quick preview of that. But first of all, a big story broken by The Telegraph on Sunday by Sam Wallace. Very nice man, Sam Wallace. We like him. He not very often when you see this on the front page of a sports supplement or on a little tweet, world exclusive. Is it actually a world exclusive? But this is a proper world exclusive, isn't it? And the project Big Picture, which has sort of come out over the last 24 hours, which is Manchester United and Liverpool driving this big shake-up of English football, has caused a lot of consternation. The Premier League was straight out with a statement saying that they were disappointed by it. They were even more disappointed that I think Rick Parry had gone on the record and made some comments positively about it as well. Just explain to us the background behind it, Crook, because I know that you covered this story on Darren Bent's Boot Room on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, Sam very kindly came on the programme to explain exactly what it means. It's a very in-depth proposal, but I think the big talking points from it are that they want an 18-team Premier League from 3 years' time, I believe, and 24 teams in each of the EFL divisions, the Championship, League One and League Two. In return, they would give the EFL £250 million to split amongst their members immediately. So, of course, that's going to be a massive help when you look at the economic effects that the pandemic is having on clubs outside the Premier League at the moment. But they're not going to give something for nothing. What they would like is to scrap the way the voting is done at the moment is that you need 14 clubs to agree to a specific proposal. That would go out the window. You would only need six clubs to get any kind of new resolution passed in the Premier League. Now, let's put two and two together. The driving force behind this is the Big Six, the two Manchester clubs, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham and Liverpool, plus three invited guests, the three longest serving members of the Premier League, Southampton and Everton and West Ham, I believe, are the three other clubs. Yeah. What they're trying to do is take control of the Premier League. And I think this is basically,
it's wider than that, isn't it? It's taking control of English football, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And Sam called it ambitious. I would use a different word. I would call it sinister. Because basically, I think this is the first step towards a European Super League that has been touted for a long time. And as you say, it's going to be the richest clubs in the land basically owning the rest of the football pyramid. And the only reason that Rick Parry and the EFL are even contemplating agreeing to this is because so many clubs are in such dire straits. They're taking advantage of the pandemic and almost blackmailing them into agreeing to these proposals. I'm dead against it. I think the majority of right-minded football fans would be dead against it. And I think even the Premier League are against it. When you look at their statement, they're pretty clear where the leak came from. They're directing it at Rick Parry, no question.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that that is the case? Because you would think, and if I am understanding it right by the way I looked at the proposals, that the top two still get promoted, but then there's less teams in the playoff, isn't there? Because they're going to...
They want a playoff between the Championship team, yeah, and the two third teams and relegated team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's one less place in the playoffs for the EFL Championship teams. That wouldn't be acceptable to them in any other circumstances. Certainly wouldn't be acceptable that there was 18 teams in the Premier League, because their dream is obviously to get into that league. So it really is a bit of bribery, taking advantage of what is a real difficult situation for EFL Cubs at the moment. And with other proposals, the Carabao Cup being knocked on the head and the Community Shield being knocked on the head, it does seem to me that they've just got this eye on the 24-25 season, when I think the Champions League will be restructured and there'll be more games in that competition. And they want to make space for it too.
Yeah, he's very much looking that way. It'd be very interested to see if it does get sanctioned. If it does get sanctioned, there'll be a hell of a lot of disappointed people. Financially, you know, no doubts it would disappoint a lot of people. But on the flip side of that, there's going to be a lot of people a lot happier if it does go down that road.
I suppose it's sort of almost a bit like sort of the Premier League being quite opportunistic, in that they're looking at the situation that the EFL clubs find themselves in and thinking, well, do you know what? If we're going to strike, now's the right time to do it, when they're really desperate. It's not a particularly attractive look, is it?
I do wonder if the only reason that Rick Parry is driving it is because he knows the EFL is in a bit of a mess at the moment, and I don't think they've handled the pandemic particularly well if you compare what they've done to what the Premier League have implemented. But this European Super League has been talked about for a long time. I remember when Andy was at the peak of his powers for Manchester United, they were talking about a big breakaway league involving Juventus and Real Madrid and Barcelona. I'm sure that is... That is the main thing on the minds of those big six clubs. I guess the question would be, and I didn't ask Sam Wallace, how does this actually come into being? Because at the moment, for any new proposal, they still need 14 votes. So do the rest of the Premier League have to give their backing for this even to get off the ground?
Yeah, well, I suppose they have to. I mean, the thing about the European Super League never makes sense to me, because one of the reasons why the Premier League is such a vibrant league is because of the competition between teams. You're not expected to compete with those at the very top. And one of the things that drives that is the fan culture. The fan culture is amazing in English football. We have people that travel from Penzance up to Newcastle to watch their team. No one's going to be travelling. 2,300 Liverpool fans are not going to travel from Anfield to Juventus every week, are they? Or off to Kazakhstan, wherever it is. I don't know where they're going to end up playing. They could play it anywhere. But a Milan versus Manchester regular fixture is not really something that football's traditions allow for. One of the things that we love about the romantic nature of Real Madrid coming to town is the fact that it's a very rare experience, Andy.
Yeah, it's not for me. I'm sitting here listening to you. It's not really viable as well. You know, if you look at the expense of that, you know, you turn and say, how are punters, if it come to that stage, how are punters actually going to afford all this? You know, we have to, we keep talking about
probably
football now.
With last week's game, yeah. Anything to
and
go
we
by.
We watch it now with no punters and we're all disappointed we can't see any fans in the ground. I want to go to football matches now, you know. To be fair, I'm sick of watching it on TV because I actually want to be there. So, you know, I would be very disappointed if it happened, but that seems to be the way football is moving. You know, it's all about finances, finances, finances.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
It's Dominic Calvert-Lewin with a debut goal brilliantly set up by Grealish, and Calvert-Lewin comes to meet it.
It's game, set and match. Denmark now with Statman Eriksen, a beautiful left foot curler.
Rashford now on the edge of the penalty area with a fantastic effort and a brilliant goal from Marcus Rashford.
Great save down to his right by Schmeichel, who gets low and gets a massive big hand onto the ball.
Wonderful ball swung into space. And it's Connor Cody that has got the goal.
Eriksen sips it through to Poulsen. Poulsen in the box, and Poulsen scores.
When you get to that kind of stage, you really want to go on and win it. So for the competition's point of view, it's a great challenge for us.
Okay, England play Denmark on Wednesday night, and Gareth Southgate obviously is going to have to change his team again. Let's hear what he said after the match with Belgium.
Well, we've gone into a game with the best team in the world without Sterling and Kane, so. And in a game where we had to take Henderson off after an hour. So to not have those three at critical moments of the game and to still put the performance on that we did is just credit to everything we're trying to do. You know, the squad we're trying to build and the competition for places that exists. And, you know, we also had a performance against Wales the other night that teed today up, because if we don't win that game, then we've got a drama for 3 days and we don't have a clear head going into today's game. So the whole squad, we're into a sort of tournament situation this week. We're 3 games, we needed to rotate the squad. Impossible to keep 29 happy because it doesn't go into 23. but that's what we'll find in the tournament, and we've now got to go again against Denmark and prepare properly for that game. And you know, today has taken a huge amount out of the players mentally and physically. So we've got to be ready for Wednesday to make sure we capitalise on the result.
Look, he's going to make changes. It's very difficult. I mean, you can't see Kieran Trippier playing again after playing two 90-minute back-to-back games. He's got to be given a rest. Otherwise, Diego Simeone will be on the phone. I mean, probably Gareth Southgate, because he's only got O-level Spanish, will not understand a word that he's saying. But it won't matter. The fact is, you can't ask Trippier to play again, even if it is out of position. So I suppose they'll be hoping that Ben Chilwell's fit. If not, Bukayo Saka will get another go.
I mean, he's got a big squad there. He's got the opportunity to give everyone a go, see what they're made out of. And especially after coming off a good result against Belgium, have a look at players now. Have a look and say, right, you know, we're preparing ourselves for the summer. You know, I want to make these changes and have a good look at these individuals that I've brought into the squad.
Is that how you see it? Rather than actually go and win against Denmark and all of a sudden you are in pole position in this group and you can win the Nations League, Crook?
I'm with Andy on this. I'm not sure the Nations League in its second holding, it holds quite the prestige it did first time round. I'm not sure Gareth Southgate's main aim is to win this competition. It's all about building momentum and building his squad for the European Championships. I'd like to see Danny Ings given a chance as England's main striker. Only Jamie Vardy has scored more goals than Ings in the Premier League since the start of last season. I thought he did a very selfless job for the team in the first game in midweek, played out wide, scored a fantastic bicycle kick. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin has had two games through the middle. Harry Kane is not fully fit, and I think Jose Mourinho would probably prefer that he didn't play in this game. Let's let Danny Ings play in his number nine role. He's earned the shirt. Gareth Southgate has said he'll pick players on form. I think he deserves a go.
Crookie spoke sense. First time.
Should we clip that up as a as one of our sort of, that should be your showreel there, Crookie?
I'll take that.
Mr. Cole said that you spoke sense for the first time. The back three will be pretty pleased with themselves, won't they? You know, they've kept clean sheets galore now. It's one goal that they've conceded in seven matches. So if they've managed to keep out the likes of De Bruyne, Carrasco, Lukaku for the most part of that game, apart from the penalty, obviously. But they do have a coach in Kasper Hjulmand, who is known as the Danish Pep Guardiola. He fancies himself as a little bit of a reinventor of Danish football. So they play quite progressive. I think they too have sort of experimented with three at the back, but they actually play a back four with two fullbacks that get so high and wide that they can be left a little bit exposed, actually. So, I mean, it'd be fascinating to see whether they take that same approach at Wembley.
Does he wear a roll neck, a Danish Guardiola?
I think he might do. It's a bit chilly on Wednesday night, from what I hear.
You two could have a roll neck off, couldn't you?
Me, Pep, and Kasper Hjulmand in the fashion stakes. And Mikel Arteta, by the way, who I think has improved his sartorial elegance over the course of the last 12 months.
Yeah, that's what happens when you work with Pep.
Yeah, it is. Maybe we should give you some classes on that, Crook, because your sartorial elegance is poor, isn't it?
Yeah, I do. What I lack in fashion sense, I make up in other areas, I think. Wait. You made him laugh.
And he's not having that.
Oh, dear.
We can't all be as stylish as you two, let's be honest.
Well, exactly. The best thing was when we first did our show together, Andy Perry Groves and I, we all turned up in a white T-shirt, right?
Andy's obviously kept that going.
Andy turned up in a Hugo Boss T-shirt. I turned up with one from River Island, and Perry Groves turned up with one from Primark.
I was going to say George.
And we said that sort of illustrated the sort of pecking order of its sartorial elegance amongst the three of us. Right, okay, listen, thank you very much for coming on the programme, Andy. We appreciate it. It was a good look
thank
back
you.
At the England performances and look forward. And Crook, we'll see you on, I suppose it'll be Thursday afternoon when we get the next podcast out for a preview to the weekend.
When the proper football comes back.
Hey, just enjoy it. For God's sake, they've just beaten the world number one ranked side. Everyone's so miserable. Look, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Well done, well done. Andy,
well done.
Crook, thank you very much. We'll be back on Thursday with Darren Lewis from The Mirror. This is the TalkSport Game Day Post-Match Pod.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.